her. She told him yes, she still had her license, and no, she didn't own a gun. Not anymore. Her independence was a recession casualty. She wound up the Sally Rhodes agency and escaped with no major debts. But there was still the mortgage. None of the big security investigation firms were hiring, so she was forced to find another job her experience qualified her for. Being a researcher was essentially what she was used to. Phoning strangers, asking questions, rushing about in heavy traffic, rummaging through microfiche. There were even seductive improvements. Working in television, she could rush about in minicabs and retire her much-worn bus-train tube pass. On her first day, she was ushered into the open-plan survival kit office and given a desk behind one of the strange fluted columns that wound their way up through the Mithrin building. Her workstation was next to April Treese, an untidy but well-spoken redhead. "Don't be surprised if you find miniature bottles in the drawers," April told her. The previous tenant went alky. Sally had little to move in. No photographs, no toys, no gun. Just a large desk diary and a contacts book. Her mother had given her a Filofax once, but it was somewhere at home, unused. "Welcome to the TV trenches," April said, lighting the next cigarette from the dog end of the last. "The business that chews you up and spits you out." "Why work here, then?" "Glamour, darling," she said, scattering ash over the nest of post-it notes around her terminal. The other woman was a year or so younger than Sally, in her early 30s. She wore a crushed black velvet hat with a silver arrow pin. "They put all the new bugs next to me, like an initiation." Their desks were in a kind of recess off the main office, with no window. Sally hadn't yet worked out the building. It seemed a fusion of postmodern neo-brutalism and Art Deco chintz. In reception, there was a plaque honouring an award won by Constant Draka for the design. She suspected that after a while the place would make her head ache. "Need protection?" April said, opening the cavernous bottom drawer of her desk. "We did an item last series and were deluged with samples. Have some chums." She dumped a large carton of condoms on Sally's desk. Under cellophane, Derek Leach, multimedia magnet, was on the pack. Safe sex instructions in a speech balloon issuing from his grin. "Careful," she warned. "They rip if you get too excited. We had the brand thoroughly road-tested. The office toy boy was sore for months." Sally looked at the carton, unsure how to react. Naturally, that was when Tiny Chislehurst dropped by to welcome her to the team. She woke up on a couch in reception. She saw the painted ceiling, a graffiti nightmare of surreal squiggles and souls in torment. Then she saw April. "Bender tried loosening your clothes," she said, referring to the notorious office lech. "But I stopped him before he got too far." April's eyeliner had run, but she had stopped crying. Sally sat up, swallowing a spasm. Her stomach heaved, but settled. April hugged her, quickly, then let her go. "Do you want a cab? To go home?" She shook her head. She buttoned up her cardigan and waited for a tidal wave of grief, pain, horror. Nothing hit. She stood, April with her. She looked around reception. Plants spilled out of the lead rhomboid arrangement that passed as a pot. Framed photographs of Tiny and the other presenters, marked with the logos of their programmes, were arranged behind Heidi's desk. "Sal?" She felt fine. The buzz of worry irritation, which usually cluttered her head, was washed away. All morning she had been picking through viewing statistics. Her impending Connor discussion prevented